then to Price Time Security Podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Mickey Bresman, CEO of Semperis. Mickey, hello.
Hi, Ian. Great to be here. I'm Mickey. I'm the CEO of Semperis. I have about 20 years of different IT roles. Started my IT career in the Navy. Been through several different positions along the way on the customer side. Had a professional services company as the CTO and then Semperis CEO.
Your company focuses upon Active Directory and dealing with the problems. How have we got to such a mess with Active Directory? Because I'm old enough to remember pre-Active Directory and Microsoft products. And it was supposed to be the solution to the whole domain problem that we have with Windows NT. Yet, it's anything but a solution at the moment. How did we get here?
AD is a great solution. So let's start with that. It plays a crucial role and it still does what it's supposed to do. It's one of the best directory services out there. What changed is what happened in the world in the last 20 years. 20 years ago, there was no thing as a cloud. There was no such thing as work from home. And many of the other things that we take for granted today, like smartphones, mobile devices, and similar. So AD is doing what it's supposed to be doing. It just wasn't planned to do it in the new environment where we live in today. It's still able to do what it needs to do. It just requires you to rethink how you approach the general usage of AD. 20 years ago, what we are familiar with today as cyber attacks, ransomware, wiper, and so on, was not really a thing. Security was part of the discussion. But when AD was introduced, security was kind of the afterthought. I remember in 2003, the initial books about security and raising the awareness about how AD is not secure and what you need to do. AD can be adjusted. It can be still used, as we see by 90% of the companies out there. It just cannot be left to its own devices.
One of the challenges that organizations face with AD is the explosion of objects in it. When we first started out, we thought, yeah, we've got users, we've got their computers, and we might have a few software accounts for the applications we're using. Today, those represent a very small number of the objects that sit inside our Active Directory. When you go and talk to people, how many of them really comprehend the size of their AD and have plans to better partition it up or to get control?
I'll take your question and I'll actually add a few interesting tidbits along the way. When AD was first introduced, there was this concept that security boundaries can be defined by domains. Mm-hmm. So I used to work for a company that was distributed globally. We had people all across the world. And each one of those countries was presented as a domain under the concept of this will be a security boundary. Fast forward about 5 years later, Microsoft came in and saying, oh no, that's not what we intended. Actually, domain is not a security boundary, but it was already in place, and now go change it. Nobody wants to go into that. It's a painful project, and done several of those. That was the one thing that people thought, okay, what do we do with it now? Over 20 years, you probably had, and I'm going to be gentle, 5 different admins that was doing some sort of a configuration in your environment, had some idea of where they want to take it, some thoughts and so on. Then they were replaced by somebody else. That someone had some other ideas and he or she took it to a different direction. My point there is that here you are 20 years later, you have different configurations that was put there for different reasons. Nobody really knows why. We have this object that nobody wants to touch because we don't sure what it's going to break. Now think about the fact that AD is in the heart of everything. I was once asked by a CIO of an organization, how critical is AD? Why are we talking about it? And I asked him, what is the most critical infrastructure or application that you have in your environment? The answer was, of course, the mainframe. The reason why is because you come in the morning, you log in, and that's where you do your old transactions. I said, okay, perfect. But now imagine you come in the morning, type your username and password, and nothing happens. That's what is the meaning of AD. Why I'm bringing it up is because now when you're looking at your environment and you want to make changes, if you're using the default solutions that come with AD, it's very frightening. I'm going to change something. Potentially my environment will break. Something will stop working. How many people have you had a chat with that want to change the password of a service account that was in that environment set up 15 years ago? They know that they have to change it because in some cases they already cracked it, so they already know how bad it is. But I have no idea where this thing is running.
But that raises an interesting problem, doesn't it? It's not just the odd service account. that's got a password that was maybe put in 5, 10, 15 years ago. A vast number of these static objects have passwords that are set to never expire. They were never created as strong passwords, not even by the standards of the day when they were first put in. How do people begin to get a control of this? Because we're not talking about a dozen, two dozen objects. We can be talking 1,000, 5,000, 10,000 objects in a large enterprise.
So in a large enterprise, what I've seen is that you will actually have tens of thousands of changes to objects on a daily basis. Now let it sink for a minute. But it's a great question, the ability to try and to understand, what do I even have in there? Who is changing things in my environment? Who has permission to change things in my environment? Are the configuration that I have protects me? Am I secured or not? All valid questions, especially if you think about how many attacks we're seeing. The cyber criminal side got up to the idea of, wait a minute, there is this system out there that have been misconfigured 20 years ago, and if I get in, I can do whatever I want. That's a very interesting observation. Now, by saying I can do whatever I want, let's just play it out a bit. If I get in inside of somebody's AD, and we've seen those, unfortunately, multiple times, A, I own everything in their environment. B, what sometimes is not immediately clear, but I actually own their cloud environment as well. Because for most of the organizations out there, they will be in what we will refer a hybrid identity scenario, which will mean at the very least AD on-prem and Azure AD in the cloud, potentially Okta, Ping Identity, and others, identity providers in the cloud. But if you want to have Office 365 as an example, that will mean by default you have Azure AD as well. Since objects are synchronized from AD on-prem to the cloud, all of a sudden, the object that I got control on in the on-prem environment in AD actually have now representation in the cloud environment as well. Through that, I potentially already have access to your Salesforce, I potentially have access to everything that you have synchronized to work with your Azure AD environment. We all want the single sign-on experience, to keep it simple. We're starting to see some interesting attacks. We see attacks where I break in into AD environment, I add a user to a group in the on-prem environment, that group is being synchronized to Azure AD, then to that group I assign a role in Azure AD that have full access into the Salesforce environment. Voila.
But here's something that we could do, isn't it? We could take our environment, we could use the cloud, and we could create a copy of our environment to do some testing here. Because those objects not only have dodgy passwords, but the vast majority of them have permissions that they really shouldn't have. Once they're breached, they're running around with full-level administrative permissions. Why are we not seeing people attempt to duplicate their AD environment in a test phase so that they can begin to do wholesale changes of passwords or start to address these permissions so they can see the impact and then apply that back to their live production environment?
So we actually do see people do exactly what you just described. Let's start with the challenge, why we don't see more people do it, I would say. The challenge is that if you want to spin up a test environment that duplicates your AD, it's not so simple. Imagine that you're a company that has 100 domain controllers, that's the service that runs AD. And you want to create a lab environment, you're probably not going to put the whole 100 there, you're going to put 5 maybe. Back in the day when I was working on the IT side of things, when we were doing that procedure manually, I think on average it took us between a week to two just to create the lab environment. Because what it means is that you now go manually and you clean up all of the machines that are no longer there, metadata cleanup process and so on. It takes time and effort. That's why, and even then, only if you really know what you're doing, you will get to a point of what you're trying to achieve. And that's why many companies don't do it. There are ways today to automate the entire processes, but not everybody are there yet.
But if we're not doing it, where do we find the tools that enable us to fix this? Because clearly we've got to fix this, because we're playing into the hands of the cyber criminals every single day of our lives. So, can't duplicate, what tools do I need?
There are several different things that you will probably want to think about. One is called AD security assessment or red teaming exercise. There are solutions today that can help you with that, which basically what it allow you to do is go in and look for what is called indicators of compromise, indicators of exposure, and so on. I would expect from the security perspective to see the solution that finds all of those indicators to map them to the different attack frameworks, the MITRE attack framework or the ANSI attack framework that I actually really like. and there are some others there as well. But it will help you understand through the TTPs where are you in the attack path. Then you will want something that will prioritize those for you. It will say how bad it is. If you have a lot of blinking lights all of a sudden, you're like, okay, I don't know what to do with it. I'm not going to do anything at all. But if I have something that will say this is critical, this is not so critical, this you can ignore for now, then I will go to the most critical ones and I will start doing something about it. That's a very high priority as well, especially because we know that there is not enough skilled people out there. Everybody is running with less people that they really need, the known cybersecurity skill gap. Also, the solution can give you some recommendations of here is your current attack surface, here is where you're exposed, here is where it's really bad, and by the way, here is what you can do to try and reduce it. That is extremely valuable to most organizations. That would be one thing that I would really focus on. Can I understand what is my current configuration? Where do I have vulnerabilities in my current configuration? Then going to, this is something that I hear quite often recently, the configuration drift. So I understood that I have an issue, I worked on it, I solved it, I got it to a point where I'm happy with, and I let it be. But then things happen, as you know, it's a live environment, so somebody else comes in, it does this change, that change, and so on. Then one day, all of a sudden, you find out that what you thought is your situation is no longer relevant. So something that can basically look at how your environment is changing, and making sure that you are still compliant, secured, all of those things that you need to worry about. From my perspective, this is the preventative side of things. This is what I typically refer to as the pre-attack stage. Then you have what I would refer to as the during the attack stage. Mm-hmm. What you want to be thinking about is, I want to make sure that no matter how sophisticated the attacker is, and they are sophisticated, and I have a lot of respect from the things that I'm seeing out there, I want to make sure that no matter how sophisticated it is, I can always know what have they been doing in my environment. Mm-hmm. Now, it sounds like a simple thing to do, but it's not. AD have several different ways on how it can be abused without leaving any trace. Some of them were straightforward, more of a brute force approach. I got to a point where I have a privileged account. I log into a server at DC. I disable the auditing agent, destroy the security event logs, and then I create multiple backdoors. Now, as the defender, what you would know is that this account that was used to log into this DC is no longer under my control. But what happened from that point on? How many of those now have been created in my environment? Which one of those are stealthy? And there is ways to hide objects and ideas, you probably know. Those are the things that you would not know, and you have to know about those. This was a brute force example. There are some that are a bit more sophisticated that will basically do a direct injection, because keeping in mind, at the end of the day, AD has a database. If you directly inject into AD, the most known scenario is the DC Shadow one, Mimikatz, it bypasses the security event logs. You will see that something happened, because you will see the rogue machine showing up and disappearing, but what was pushed into your environment, that is something that you should be really worried about. A way to see changes introduced to my environment is super critical. The other one, you want to make sure that it's not too late. Coupling the things that you are seeing with predefined notifications is crucial. If I know that nobody should be touching Ian's object, if somebody now does, I probably want to know about it right away and not at some point in time. And then there are the next stage of things are happening very fast, especially if the attack is not done manually, meaning somebody have already scripted the whole thing. Then you want the system to fight back. You don't want to wait for somebody to manually try to understand and do something. It's probably going to be too late. What I mean by that is, going back to the Ian example, let's say that Ian is the most privileged user in my environment and Ian have the keys to do everything in my environment. We can easily say that no changes should ever be done to his account. If somebody does change, let's say, Ian's password, you want to send notification to the SIMSOC underlay so they will know that it's happening, but you also don't want to wait that somebody will respond. What you want is the system to undo the change that was done, to disable the account that did it. You probably want to also disable Ian's account just in case, because you don't know what you don't know. Creating a quarantine around the event, containing it as fast as possible by the machine, not waiting for the human intervention.
You talked there about one of the pre-attack things being drift. But drift isn't just about pre-attack. Drift is about what goes on daily, even during an attack. We've spent a lot of effort over the last couple of years in the data world talking about data quality and making sure we understand where we are with the quality of our raw data. As you say, AD is a database underneath. How do we bring those same approaches to securing corporate data and databases across to AD? Because there are tools that are being used on the data side that allow us to identify drift, that allow us to see when things aren't changing. And particularly in a world where, as you say, some people are making 10,000 changes a day, we need that level of understanding, the sort of level that a transactional database tool would be giving us.
That's the perfect question. What happens in AD, and I refer to this as the data integrity challenge, I will need to give a little bit of explanation on how it works in terms of how you gather the data from AD, but most of the common ways to gather data from AD has to do with the following. You go to the security event logs that reside on different machines, you send them all to a central location, and then you're trying to make sense out of them. Here's the challenge. Many of the events that are happening in AD are not actually a humanly readable single line. Ian used to be part of this group, now Ian is part of that group. In reality, what you have is three events coming from this machine, another three events coming from that machine, and three events coming from the other machine. They're not coming in the same sequence, so maybe something is coming before something else because there's also network latency. Then you have somebody trying to make sense out of all of it. I've seen security analysts really struggle going through this. They have all the data, it's in front of them. To make sense out of it, it's really, really, really hard.
But it seems odd to me that we're still struggling with that, because if I look at transaction logs from a database perspective, there are ways for me to replay those logs so that actually I can take that data from different positions, the tools reassemble it into what happened in a timeline.
If only AD had something more than the current state, but it doesn't. AD only provides you with the current state. It doesn't store anything anywhere. All you can have is what is my current state. There is nothing that goes back in time. Also, the security event logs that are created on this is, for most companies, if you want to go really deep into getting as much information as possible, you won't store those for more than, I would say, half a day. Even that will be crazy. Just because it will be overwritten all the time. So you need some sort of a solution that can do that for you. You need something that gathers that information. Something like a SIEM is a good starting point. The next level, if you want to go a bit above just the general SIEM, you would want the solution that actually understands AD. Mm-hmm. You want the solution that can see those 9 different events that makes it English readable. Goes, here's what happened, here's where it came from, here is when it happened, here is the machine, and here is who made it. By the way, the who made it thing is crucial not just to security perspective. As I told you before, I used to be a CTO of a professional services company, and I've seen multiple scenarios where the CEO of a company comes in, he's not happy because he cannot get his emails anymore for some reason. They start to investigate why, they find out what happened, but they have no idea who did it, and then all of a sudden you have the team in the US pointing to the team in Japan pointing to the team in the UK, and there is no real way to figure out why. The other thing, which is kind of on the borderline of security, one day Ian comes in and he's very unhappy and he's saying, I used to be able to access this site up until yesterday, today I can't. Mickey looks at Ian's account and he sees that Ian is not part of the group that have access to this site. But Mickey looks at the history and he sees that up until yesterday, Ian actually had that permission. Now that immediately raises the question, somebody took him out. Who is that somebody? Am I allowed to put Ian back in? Who should I ask? There is a lot of things that you just don't know.
But there's a very simple problem-solving thing here, isn't it? It's the what, who, where, when, and why.
You're absolutely right in terms of those are the questions that needs to be answered. But as I mentioned, it's not always so simple to answer those. Taking the security angle again, because when I'm engaging in a type of a red teaming exercise for the sake of discussion, or if I'm a cyber criminal, let's take that angle, I don't want you to be able to answer those questions. I want to make sure that I make the changes without you being aware. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, there are ways to do it in the AD environment. And the only way to be able to deal with something like that is to have a solution that can actually go and look at AD from the AD perspective. What I always remind people is, at the end of the day, I, as the adversary, want to make a change in AD, and I want the change to be there, because that's how I, as an adversary, get access to whatever resource I'm trying to get access to. So the data is there. The question becomes, do you, as the defender, have a way to see the change that happened?
But many of our tools rely on logs that show us a change has occurred. We don't seem to pay a lot of attention to the absence of information, and the tools certainly don't pick up when there's an absence or a missing block of data that they would otherwise expect. What do we change? Because an absence of data is probably much more telling than trying to trawl through vast amounts of logs.
I don't know what I don't know. This is the biggest question, for sure. My general approach, and then I'm of course biased, is that the way we figured out how to deal with it is go and have AD itself as one of the data sources for questioning. Meaning, I want to be able to ask AD directly and not just the security event logs and similar. I want to ask AD what happened to you. And for that, you basically create a stream of events that allows you to see what's happening. At the end of the day, AD is a multi-master database. It's replicating all the time the information. What we end up figuring out that will work is be part of the same stream. The same way the two servers in AD communicate to each other how they've changed things, we are participating to some degree in the same discussions. I'm abstracting a bit the technology, but we basically get the same information that they are exchanging between them. We're getting the same type of data, and this data is coming now directly from AD. So that way you know for sure that there is no way to hide things from you.
But how many support teams in your experience have a process that takes what AD knows has changed and compares that to what the logs tell you has changed? Because that's where you will find those gaps. And my experience is that very few people, if any, have that process in place.
Completely agreed. And typically they will get there when something really went wrong. And I've seen an organization taking an AD backup, dump it into, I don't remember how many hundreds of Excel spreadsheets, and then taking the current state of AD, dump it into, I don't know again, how many hundreds of Excel spreadsheets, and then manually trying to compare it. They went through that exercise because they were breached, and it was really ugly. They found some things. They were absolutely sure that they have not found all of them. Mm-hmm. But again, as I mentioned, there are solutions today in the market that can do it for you.
The one thing we haven't touched on at the moment is access management. We touched on it briefly in terms of objects, but users. Users never lose a right. Stay there long enough and you have all the keys to the kingdom. But we've talked about privileged access management for 20 plus years. What needs to change in the mentality of organisations to persuade them that actually taking away privileges is not a bad thing?
It's a great question that I actually think quite often about. There are a few things that needs to happen. Let's start with the question of why people are not giving up permissions, because we all are familiar with the rubber stamping. Do you still need the privilege? Of course I need it. I cannot live without it. And you go, but you haven't done anything with it for the last 12 years. Why do you say that you need it? So that goes to the question of why do we see such a behavior, which is a very human type of a behavior, nothing unusual here. The reason that people clinging to their permissions is because they're very much concerned about, will I ever get it back? If I give it up, is this is the end? Or will I need to go through hoops to try and get something back? My advice in general to the security teams out there, make sure that when somebody asks to get back permissions that they used to have, make sure that you get to a point where they trust you enough to know that the fact that they're giving up the permissions now does not mean that that's it, this is the end. Make sure that if they are giving up the permissions, when they will actually need them, it will be a relatively simple process to ask and get those back.
But simple processes are great to say, they're hard to implement. I once did a piece of contracting for a financial services company. I turned up on day one. The connection between HR and IT was so broken that it took 4 of the 5 days that I was supposed to be on site to actually get me on the system. On the Friday, they wanted to extend me for another 2 weeks, but taking me off the system was easy. It then took another 3 days of the following week to undo that so I could actually, in the end, get 8 days productive work in over a 15 working day period. If we're going to take permissions away and then be willing to give them back, we've got to change the approach. What needs to change? Is it just process, or is it mentality, Or is it tooling?
First of all, I never said that it's simple. It's all of it, right? As with any major challenge that you have in IT, it's all going to be about people, process, tools. You're going to have all the three. You can't do anything by one of them. Another thing that I see it improving, and that's very encouraging, is a matter of trust. Meaning, if I, as the IT organization, let's take it from that perspective, trust my security teams, and my security teams trust me as the IT organization, and my HR department trust both of us, and we trust them, and it also have to do how well do we work together, and this will not happen without somebody from above basically making sure that this is indeed the situation. But that's the key to start and do something. It's not necessarily the technology challenge. I'm sure that if that organization wanted to spin up your permissions, they could have done it relatively fast. It's not rocket science. It's more about who approved it, what is the process, how many people need to sign, what happens if one of them is not there today, does that mean that that's it, we are stuck till tomorrow, and so on and so forth. That's what creates this challenge of I'm not giving up anything that I got, because if I want it again, then I know that Ian will be waiting now for 2 weeks to get access to this folder or whatever it is that Ian needs access to. Trust is something that you really have to make sure that you have. And I would say collaboration between the different units. I once saw an organization where the default is don't do anything, because why would you? There is no positive that you gain by doing something good. But there is a lot of things to lose if for some reason somebody is not happy with what you've done. And that immediately creates a culture of do nothing. There's a lot of things that you can solve. But back to the question, from our perspective, a lot of it have to do with the upper management. Mm-hmm. Making sure that we all understand that we are the same company, we have the same goals, we all trust each other. And if Ian needs permissions, we all need to make sure that he gets them.
We're starting to travel again now. We're starting to get back to conferences. Imagine I've just stuck you on stage in front of a room full of people, and all they want from you is three things that they can do to improve their state of Active Directory. What are they?
It's a great question. The first one, since we know that AD is in the middle of everything and that the organization is going to stand still if AD goes down, mm-hmm. I would say make sure that you have an AD disaster recovery plan that you have tested. You will be surprised how many people have something written on paper, but have never tried it. Another thing with trying an AD recovery, you need something that allows you to think through. I'll give you a very simple example of what I mean, so that it will be easier to understand. If you have an AD disaster recovery plan that says that you need to first to log in to a file server, but that file server is dependent on AD, that's not going to work. If you have a storage device that is authenticated against AD, and this is part of your recovery plan, it's not going to work. AD has been there for 20 years and everything is dependent on it. You need to make sure that wherever your disaster recovery plan is calling out for, it's indeed something that you can execute upon. Another thing that you also want to consider is that the approach to AD disaster recovery probably should be more of a cyber one, as opposed to we had the fire somewhere. It's not really the concern anymore. We've been infected by malware, somebody broke in, and so on and so forth. Make sure that whatever you plan as the recovery takes into consideration the cyber side of it. And I would even say not just take into consideration, start with the cyber side, because that's really what you should be concerned about. There's a lot of things that I can add on that, but I would say make sure that you have your cyber-first approach to AD disaster recovery figured out. The second thing that I would say, make sure that you do whatever you can to keep your AD in a state that makes it as hard as possible for somebody to take it out. Don't get me wrong, I don't think there is a 100% way that you can prevent attacks. It's reasonable to assume that you will need your AD disaster recovery plan. But it doesn't mean that I don't want to make the life of my attacker as hard as possible by closing as many gaps as I can and basically containing things as fast as I can. Mm-hmm. I would say the second recommendation, scan your AD environment, see what you have as gaps, and close them. That's, in many cases, easier said than done. The third thing that I would say, tying it to the current state of events, if you remember 2017, Russia and Ukraine had this thing going on, and then the world experienced what is called NotPetya. And NotPetya, according to the US government, ended up being about $10 billion in damages. I don't even know what that number means, to be honest, but it's a big one. not bad, yeah, wasn't even a direct attack. It was the mistake. You had thousands of companies going down all on the same day. But the thing there was, what it exposed is A, the usage of AD, if it was misconfigured to distribute the malware and so on all over the place, and B, for the companies that had their AD encrypted, the recovery path was extremely painful, and it took days, and in some cases, weeks. This should not be acceptable today. The discussion should be, how can I bring my AD up again in a matter of minutes and up to a few hours? It cannot be 9 days, as we've seen with some of the stories that are publicly disclosed out there. So, to your question, make sure that you have a cyber-first approach to ADDR. Make sure that you do whatever you can to close all the gaps and all the holes, so that when the adversary is trying to get in, you are not the easiest target out there. And the third one is, make sure that you also have a solution in place that can help you to understand what changes are happening in your environment, where they're coming from, no matter how sophisticated the adversary is, and then allows you to notify about it, and in some cases to contain it as fast as possible.
One of the reasons, by the way, I was smiling when you were talking about disaster recovery plans is the number of times I see them left on the network. So when the attacker gets in, he knows what you're going to do to recover. The second is, when it's on the network and your network goes down, you've got no chance of recovering, full stop. And I think it's a lesson that a lot of companies need to learn. Mickey, thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you, Ian. It's been a pleasure.